Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and it's time for this week's episode about the defense. We're going to be doing this episode solo tonight. We're going to talk about the lopsided win over the Broncos. Exciting game. Good game for the defense. Great game for the offense. Lots of good things to say about this. A lot of get right in this game for the Baltimore defense. So that was nice to see here. Lots of success on fourth down. The Broncos had 1 of 5 on fourth down. They had 6 of 14, which is probably not great, not terrible. It's just okay. Not a place the Ravens defense is used to being, but a step up from where they were for the first 8 weeks of the season. So from that perspective, at least a good thing. The cornerbacks back for the most part in this game. They were healthy. Humphrey played well. Seemed to be on a limited snap count in this game. Wiggins and he each got a little bit of time. I thought Wiggins played very well. We'll get to some of that a little bit later. But nice to have the cornerbacks back. Other changes in the secondary, because Marcus Williams was back. Not only did he play, he started, made a big play on the very first play of the game. Nice flying in tackle on a play to the right side. Where he stopped him for gain of one, no gain, whichever it was a very short gain anyway. You know, it's nice to see him back. Nice to see him looking like he wants to really play football, throwing his body around. And that's exactly what the Ravens need, is they need more players who throw themselves around, make tackles on the edge. It can't be only Kyle Hamilton doing that. That just is not a good thing for a football team. So anyway, that was really, really positive. They lost snap count pretty badly in this game, largely because they gave up some long drives to the Broncos. Several of their drives ended on fourth down on the Ravens' half of the field, four of their drives, in fact. And some of them ended up pretty close to the end zone, so they ended up with a lot of wasted yardage. Okay, so they didn't get the typical redraw value of the punt to give them a little bit of the extended value to their drive in terms of the exchange of field position. And they ended up, you know, giving the ball over the Ravens at the 1 yard line once. And again, I think at the 14 or so after an incomplete in the end zone, et cetera, et cetera. So from that perspective, a good game from the Ravens. From the perspective of losing snap count, this wasn't a great game to do it, because the interior defensive line was still extremely shorthanded. So they dressed five for the game. That included Madubuike, Washington, who was hurt a lot of the week and finally practiced on Friday, which, by the way, if you've been to practice on a Friday, it's a walkthrough practice. They walk through at a fraction of normal speed to make sure that people, the players, understand what the footsteps are, how they, you know, pace themselves through their movements for the plays they have installed. So it's a half speed, quarter speed practice, maybe half speed for the offense sometimes, maybe a quarter speed for the defense, because they're not really trying to defend anybody. They just want to show the offense kind of the look that they're presenting and have the offense kind of play off that. What else we have to talk about there? So anyway, the Washington returned at the end of the week. Madubuike is the one guy who's actually healthy on this team. His effectiveness is limited without either Pierce or Jones. We'll have to get into that a little bit later. But they brought up two guys from the practice squad. That's Wormley and Tupou, guys who Wormley obviously been with them years ago, but this is his first game of his second stint with the Ravens. So obviously, probably a big day for him to get back on the field in Baltimore. Tupou, who played a number of years with the Bengals, and the Ravens signed him. I think they actually cut him on an injury settlement at the end of camp, and then they just re-signed him now. So that's a fairly rare double there that you get a guy back after cutting him on injury settlement. So they did, and he was important to the Ravens. He ate up a lot of snaps. Between them, they played 30 and 27 snaps. This was not a game for the Ravens to allow 68 snaps, but hey, here we are, 68 snaps allowed. And that was a lot of defensive line snaps that were included in those. So they worked through it. Madubuike and Washington largely were paired together in this game. So they got the maximum value they could out of that pairing. And those guys played quite a few snaps. And I'll give it to you in terms of the non-penalty snaps here, because that's what I have in front of me. But Washington played 41 and Madubuike played 46. So that's a heavy single game workload for a defensive lineman. Defensive lineman, rotational position. You want those guys to be playing, rather than playing a percentage of the snaps, I'd say to be playing 30 or fewer snaps per game is probably optimal. Wormley had 28 snaps and Tupou 25 of the, and it was 30 and 27 if you include the penalties. So, you know, a little more wear on those guys, and frankly, a little bit more wear on those guys is okay, because presumably either Urban or maybe another interior defensive line will come along, and those guys will not be needed to take that same snap share on Thursday. We certainly hope that's the case. Jones active, did not play even a single snap. I will tell you, from my point of view, that is the guy who is missing from the Ravens pass rush right now. Without him on the field, in the middle, commanding double teams, Madubuike's effectiveness is greatly reduced. The other players have to face doubles where they normally wouldn't. And if you just look at what happened to both Tupou and Wormley in this game, they consistently got single teamed pretty much the whole game. So those whoever was bubbled to one side was looking to help the tackle as opposed to take an extra block on the inside. The other thing it means is that you end up not needing to use your eligible receivers as often to throw chip blocks or to stay into block on a set basis. And that really reduces not only the effectiveness of your pass rush, but the opposing passing game gets to run more productive routes because of that. So big hamstring to not have Jones in there. He's a very key player. Pierce is a substitute for him who is pretty good. And he start the year last year in 2023, it was Michael Pierce driving the pass rush from the inside and doing a great job of it. And then as the season wore on, Jones became the guy who would play more of the obvious passing downs, be paired with Madubuike more often, et cetera, et cetera. This was also the first game in a very long time that nobody other than the Ravens' big five has played even a single defensive line snap. So the five-man combination of Jones, Madubuike, Pierce, Urban, and Washington played every 2023 snap, and they played all of the snaps in the first eight games of 2024 as well. So you have to go back to 2022 to the last time somebody outside that big five rotational group has even played a single snap. That's a really amazing streak to go 25 consecutive games with five guys sharing every defensive line snap. I doubt that has happened many times. Oh, with a 3-4 defense, we'll put it that way. The Ravens obviously don't put three defensive linemen on the field too often. They almost always play two, but they sometimes play three. I'm going to tell you, in this game, they played, I think, slightly over two per play. Let me just count this up really quickly. Yeah, they had 140 spread across 67 real plays. So they played slightly over two per play. That was due to some jumbo formations they got into around the goal line. Unfortunately, you know, you don't want to spend a lot of time down in those formations, but they use a lot of defensive linemen when you do, and we'll talk about that in the packages section a little bit later. We talked about Williams, great play, you know, highlight real tackle really in the first play, and then right after that, Ardarius Washington collects the tip off. I think it was little Jordan Humphrey. And hauls it in for his first interception of the year. He's obviously had some much better chances at interceptions that he hasn't converted, but really nice to see the combination of Ardarius Washington and a tipped football come together with a positive result there for the Ravens. And he's a player who I think looked really good in this game. He was on my list of, I think, honorable mentions. I put him for the MVP, but I'm not going to tell you now, because then it'll spoil the surprise for the end of the second episode. But anyway, he played very well, I thought, had several kind of highlight drive ending plays, two of them anyway, and then a couple of the good plays in coverage as well. So very happy with what he did. And he's playing strong safety. He's not probably completely familiar with the position even now, but I didn't feel like there was a coverage breakdown in this game. And obviously there were coverage breakdowns with Eddie Jackson. We didn't really talk about that, but Eddie Jackson rode the pine in this game. Actually, not even true. He was inactive for this game, which left Williams back taking the free safety role again, and then no strong safety for plays where they want Hamilton up near the line of scrimmage. So it became the job for Ardarius Washington, who didn't play any slot corner in this game, to do that. And I thought he played very well. And then the rest of the back end, they had Mollett playing some slot corner again in this game. You had three corners on the outside. Stevens played essentially every snap on that right side. He did get replaced, I think, for the last series. And then you had Wiggins and Humphrey sharing time at left corner. And again, I thought Wiggins played pretty darn well in this game as well. I thought Humphrey was fine. Wiggins played really well in the game. What else do we have to say? Let's move on. Talks about some other general thoughts about the defense in this game. It was a solid game in terms of effectiveness for the run game. Again, if you take out the 6 for 36 that Bo Nix had, they were down to 3.6 yards per play for the non-QBs. They did allow 6 first downs. Now, some of those were by Nix, and I don't know whether it was 2 or 3, but some of those were Nix. He honestly did a good job against their running backs. I would say that's that much more impressive in a game where you're down linemen. But the Ravens, one of the things that's really good about them this year is not just the run stopping. It's more fundamental than that. They are a great tackling team. And I mean a great tackling team. They are so far ahead of every other team in the National Football League in terms of their missed tackle rate. It's not funny. I have some numbers on that a little later that I'll get to, but their run defense has been great, but fundamentals are always more portable in football. So if you're good at something that's the root cause of being good at two or three other things, that's more valuable. And you become better at, yards after the catch, for example. You become better at, reducing receiving yards in general. If you make quick tackles, usually it means you can get to the trigger more quickly downhill to get to a player who's closer to the line of scrimmage. And the Ravens certainly have players who are very comfortable doing that. And then the inside linebackers just had a tremendous year in terms of not missing tackles. I've been talking about Roquan's big streak of not missing tackles for quite some time now. And he had a streak of 59 in a row that did finally get stopped. But in addition, they've got Trenton Simpson on a great run of missed tackles. And again, I have some additional data for that we'll talk about later. They missed 5 total tackles in the game, so 7.4%. That's terrific. It reduced their missed tackle rate for the entire season to 9.6%. That's using the PFF missed tackle definition, which is extremely strict. So there are missed tackles when you're basically lunging at the other guy's ankles sometimes, which seems quite unfair for a missed tackle sometimes. In fact, Ardarius Washington was charged for one on PFF that I probably wouldn't have graded it that way, but it's just easier to talk about their missed tackle numbers in the way they do, because from week to week, I don't want to be keeping a separate total of something that's this like this. So I do appreciate the way that they do it. And I trust that it's done consistently. They have the highest tackling grade by PFF now. There's something to that. And they're probably basically saying that the missed tackles may have a minus a half, or they may be a minus one. There's different grades, obviously, of missed tackles. I've talked about that before, about how, if you retrack a runner, particularly in the backfield, that might not be a bad missed tackle at all. In fact, you may actually gain from that. If you miss a sack, you oftentimes can gain more yardage on that particular sack, because the quarterback gets away from you, drifts further back, and then gets sacked anyway. you certainly can have good things occur by missed tackles in the backfield. Missed tackles down the field or on the edge, they can cost you. So you really don't want to have them happen in the secondary. You don't want to have them happen in level two. You really want to have them happen right at the line of scrimmage or in the backfield if they're going to happen at all, and you had a better chance of them not being costly under those circumstances. Anyway, Ravens have now missed 9.6% of their tackles for the year. And just to give you an idea, the tackling grade, wide margin between them and the Steelers in terms of the tackling grade, is about 8 points on that PFF scale that's from 1 to 100. Don't put too much stock into that, but I don't anyway. But I will say this, that the Steelers have a 10.4% missed tackle rate. So it's significantly higher, almost 1% higher. But more than that, the 2023 Ravens, by comparison, and that was a triple crown defense, remember. Okay, so they led the league in sacks. Now you're thinking back and you're probably remembering a few missed sacks on missed tackles. And so am I. I can think of a Clowney flipping off a couple and maybe Urban picking them up. I could away miss, certainly slipping off some sacks. But that team had a 13% missed tackle rate for the entire season, despite being the 2023 Ravens triple crown defense. So anyway, the Ravens currently at 9.6%. It's a tremendous number. It probably will not continue at quite as good as it is right now. But it's something to really appreciate about this defense. And if you look at what Orr has done this year, a lot of things haven't gone right. Things in the secondary haven't really been schemed up great. There's things about the pass rush I'm concerned about in terms of how that's schemed. There are some things about aggressively going after variance on defense that I'm not very happy about, but the team can tackle. And when at the heart you could do that, then you can take chances on some other things, like send additional players into the backfield to try and either run blitz or to go after the quarterback on plays. You got a better chance of not really getting burned as badly on the back end. And I think in general, obviously, and we've said this many times on the show, that defense must seek variance to get the offense off the field. So you have to not just be okay or amenable to average level plays. You need to aggressively seek variance, force opponents to try and hold you, to create penalties, force opponents into bad decisions where they may turn the ball over, get them for negative plays like sacks, like tackles for loss, and force them into quick incompletions, which may end drives. So particularly when you're playing three down football, that last one is very important. When you play four down football, it becomes less of a useful strategy. You really have to go for negative plays, penalties, and turnovers once you're getting into a spot where the other team's in four down football. So, with all that's gone wrong, let's at least take a moment to say that I think Zach Orr has had a very positive influence on the tackling on this team. I could see how it would be true because he was a good tackler during his career. He's certainly a guy from that perspective that I'd want to have that fundamental race and I'd expect that fundamental value from. And that's also a reason why I wouldn't want to let him go without significant thought about the thing. All right. Now, there's been all this talk about, should we just let Zach Orr go in the middle of the season? It's conceivable that Zach Orr is not ready for the job he has, but he's ready for certain aspects of it. And, he's certainly the fact that he's brought this tackling to the Ravens, I have to give him credit for that and say, boy, let's see what else he can come up with. And I think they don't really have the proper guy, which is unfortunate, to be the guy in his headphone to take more risk. Dean Pease, he had some good adaptability in terms of trying to figure out what the opponent was, but the weakest part of Dean Pease as a defensive coordinator was his willingness to take additional risk for additional gain on defense. The guys who have been great about that in Ravens history are Rex Ryan and Wink Martindale. Those are the two. And all the others, they had various levels of not really wanting to do it, whether you're talking about Lewis or Nolan or Pagano or whoever. And they had great individual players, certainly in particular when the Reed Lewis defense was here, there wasn't really as much need to take as many chances. They still did, but there wasn't as much need to do it. But those are the two guys who I would like to have indoctrinating or into the ways of variance seeking defense. So I know he played for Dean Pease. He probably really likes Dean Pease. Dean Pease is the right age. Dean Pease is not employed currently. Rex Ryan's working for a network. I don't know if he'd want to come out of retirement to work for the Ravens or frankly to work for Harbaugh, because there might still be a little bit of aggravation there that Harbaugh kind of took his job in 2008. There is certainly some feeling on the Ravens from Ray Lewis, who said some unfortunate things at the time, saying that it was really Rex Ryan and not Harbaugh who was the coach in 2008. I don't really believe that, but there are some things about Harbaugh where I could have seen that being true from a player's perspective, because Ryan, very much a player's coach. And he'd be a guy, I think, who could help this team take more risk. All right. What else we want to talk about? Let's talk about Tupou and Wormley for a minute, because the two of them came up, played a good number of the total snaps, maybe about 40% of the total defensive line snaps were those guys, with 60% going to the big two. The big two, now Broderick Washington's part of the big two under this new injury system we have here. But those guys played about 40% of the snaps. I thought they played pretty much as well as you could reasonably hope. Anybody you pick up this time of year, and Tupou is just this week, is going to be at a lower level than what you'd be able to get earlier in the season. So you've heard me probably say this on the show before, but the replacement level drifts downward at every position, but more sharply at the size and shape positions, and defensive line is that, as the season moves on. So health is very important to those positions, which I think really benefits rotational teams over teams that like to, like the Steelers, who just try and get a ton of snaps out of Cam Hayward and Tuitt and players like that, and even going back to Aaron Smith and Kiesel and others. They always tried to get, I thought, too many snaps out of their top defensive linemen, which meant that they were more susceptible to injuries. Well, anyway, the Ravens have gotten themselves into this point. It's obviously very unfortunate what happened to Pierce, what happened to Urban, who we hope will be back soon. And so, of course, what happened to Jones. But they are a team who should suffer less of those injuries, and they had a remarkable 25-game stretch where they basically didn't have anybody hurt. They only had one inactive all of last year, and that was Broderick Washington for one game. This year, they've been playing with fire, having four defensive linemen active for several games. I think this might have been, four games before this week. And so this was really the fifth when you consider the fact that Jones wasn't really able to play. This actually might have been the fourth. Jones wasn't really ready to play last week, and they did play him some. It's not a thing you want to go into, and it's an NFL game with only four defensive linemen. And the Broncos really knew how to attack that. So the Broncos used a sixth offensive lineman. I believe it was 10 snaps in this game, which is an awful lot for one football game. Normally, you see Cleveland, and I look at his offensive line chart for the year. He's really only played as a sixth offensive lineman until this last week when he got a little run at one series at left guard. But he's played like one or two snaps per game. But in this case, they had... The guy was Pert, who came in. He played 10 snaps, 14% of the snaps as a sixth offensive lineman. So Sean Payton knew, hey, the Ravens are short. If we run the football, if we go short ball control drives, their defensive linemen are going to get tired. They're not going to be particularly effective in the second half. And fortunately, Lamar Jackson and the offense had the answer for that, and knew how to get the score run up in a hurry and in a position where even if they wanted to run the ball, it still wouldn't have been optimal because they would have been just eating clock to do so. That third quarter where the Ravens had a couple of touchdown drives and the Broncos had six total plays and zero first downs to the Ravens 12, that really sealed off any risk that the defensive line was going to be in trouble. But for the first half, it did not look good, folks. The offensive line had played a lot of snaps. I think Payton probably, even though they went into the wanted a halftime trailing, I think he probably thought we still have a chance to win this ball game.
Didn't you know it's possible to get THC shipped right to your door? Mood delivers premium 100% federally legal THC directly to you. I'm talking about delicious high potency gummies, top shelf flower, home-baked cookies, vapes, anything you'd find at a dispensary, You can now order online and have it shipped quickly, discreetly, and conveniently right to your door. And every Mood product is made from pesticide-free cannabis grown on America's best small farms at prices that won't destroy your wallet. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code RAVENS. So head to mood.com/ravens, check out their online dispensary, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code RAVENS when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
At Planet Fitness, we're declaring it. This is the year of getting stronger, and you can get started now by saving when you join today. We have all the best-in-class equipment you could ever need, and you can work out your way on your time at any convenient location near you. Most open 24 hours. So let's do this. Join Planet Fitness today and save. Just $1 down, $15 a month. See Home Club for details.
Game. If we can just keep leaning on them in the second half. Ravens came out, of course, scored a touchdown the first drive. They went three and out. And then the Ravens came back on the field and scored another touchdown, and the lights went out. But it was a, it was an opportunity at that point for the Denver to still be in the ballgame. All right, let's move on. We'll talk a little bit about packages now. Now, the Ravens played some packages they haven't really used very much, and actually some not at all. And I know every time I have to enter a new line for a package type that I never expected to come up, it's always kind of interesting. But this time it was a 4-3-3-1 package. That's a package with four linemen, three outside linebackers, three inside linebackers, and only one in the secondary. They played that for two snaps down by the goal line. They played one other version of the jumbo, a more common 4-2-2-3 look. Those four plays, now remember, they're all run from the 1 or 2 yard line, but those four plays gave up 0 yards, and very importantly, zero touchdowns. So 0 net yards and 0 touchdowns. They did give up one total yard that got the Broncos from the 2 to the 1 on one drive. And they did eventually give up a 4th and 2 touchdown on one drive where they used jumbo, but they were very effective at keeping the Broncos out of the end zone with that package. They played base for 7 snaps. Again, these are times when Pert would have been on the field. It would have been very difficult to stop the run had they not had an extra interior defensive lineman on the field. So they really had to do it. And they're very effective. 15 yards with the base defense on the field, 2.1 yards per play. I'm going to say that Peyton really didn't get the payoff that he hoped to get from going to that 6th offensive lineman. So they tried it. They really tried to lean on the Ravens, but the Ravens run defense held up pretty well to that. And that was good. They played 30 snaps of big nickel in this game. Of course, that's with Hamilton used as a slot corner. Washington doesn't have to be, but it is in this game. Washington, it's at strong safety in this case, along with Williams on the back end. And then they had multiple corners that they had in play. But those big nickel snaps, also effective, 30 plays, 141 yards, and 4.7 yards per play. They played the standard nickel 17 times. A standard nickel is as a corner at slot corner instead of a safety at slot corner. So in those plays, Hamilton was moved back to the back end. We had Maulette in at slot corner, 17 snaps, 3.9 yards per play. So very effective in those positions with whichever version of the nickel they played among big and standard. Now, they did play 9 snaps of rush nickel. Now, what's rush nickel? Rush nickel, they put 3 outside linebackers on the field and only use 1 defensive lineman. In a game like this where you're short on defensive linemen, critically important to conserve your defensive line snaps. And did a good job of that in this game. But they allowed 10.8 yards per play on those plays. And that was Tavius Robinson, you know, being kicked inside. Tavius Robinson, wow, that was a game that he had. And some spectacular oddity to the Ravens pass rush in this game that we'll get to, that's all centered around Tavius Robinson and what he accomplished with some late sacks and quarterback hits. But they did give up 10.8 yards per play with that rush nickel on the field. They did try one snap of dime, but it was negated by penalty, and then they put Simpson back in. So otherwise, they really were a committed nickel team the entire day, and will, I would guess, probably see that again versus Cincy, given how well Simpson played. However, I wouldn't be surprised if they change it if it's not working out. Burrow is going to be much more effective than Bo Nix was at taking advantage of the players on the field. Their receiving weapons are going to be more effective at doing that as well. And I think they may, if they're trying for a lot of throws between level two and level three, it wouldn't shock me to see Hamilton go back and they're playing more dime again. They have exactly enough personnel pretty much right now to do it. If they lost somebody, they start to get very stretched in that position, particularly if Humphrey has to play every snap and has to move to the slot to play some, it becomes, you know, more difficult for them to figure out exactly how they would do that. If they brought Eddie Jackson back, they'd have the players. I don't know that they'd have the quality. So, you know, they've got some choices to make about how they want to do this. Simpson playing extremely well right now, gives them an extra option they didn't know they had before. They played these five straight games of dime. They went 5-0 in them. They played three other games where they hadn't played any dime, basically two snaps or less, and they lost all three of those. Of course, this was a game where they didn't play dime, and yet they won. So this was the first trend breaker after nine games. And I posted a little thing about this in Twitter, on Reddit, and somebody on Reddit correctly says that correlation does not equal causation with regard to the dime. The thing that I would say about this is I'm not getting at the two snaps of dime versus the 20 plus snaps of dime. What happened in those games was they chose to have the dime be their pass defense in all the ones that was 20 plus. And then they played more of it when they got a lead in those games and were leaning on the lead or sitting on the lead. In the games they didn't play dime, they decided not to use the dime as their basic passing defense. And one time it was out of a personnel shortage. Basically, that was when Williams was sitting and Eddie Jackson was the free safety against the Browns. But the other times, the first two games of the season, Orr had just come in with the notion that they'd be a committed nickel team, and they hadn't really used the dime. And then when they did, they basically turned to it on all passing situations. I don't know if we'll ever hear if the decision to make that move from committed nickel to dime was an Orr decision or came from higher up like Harbaugh, or maybe a discussion with Dean Pease or however it might have occurred. But the decision to play dime really worked out. And now, you know, they've got a valuable Trenton Simpson who looks like could help them even on passing downs. And they came up with a great delayed late sack when they were down by the goal line and had real value to effectively put an end to a drive. It brought up fourth and 14, but he played very well. And I think they have options now. They can do different things. They might stay with the committed nickel, wouldn't surprise me, or they might go back to the dime if they felt like that gives them best chance to win against Cincinnati. So hopefully at least the process of going through and playing a fair amount of dime at least puts the tool in the shed for Orr that he can use it either way and be successful either way. Cause I think Hamilton was just fine playing that dime role and I think it's a matter of really getting their back end shored up, which we'll see if they have done over the course of the next several weeks with what I assume will be Williams and Ardarius Washington playing those split field roles. So is it Williams will be the free safety, and then Williams and Washington will patrol the back end on obvious passing downs. At least that'll be the starting look they show. And then they'll do whatever they choose to do in terms of rotating out of that or playing matchup zone. But we'll see how that plays out. All right, let's move on a little bit. We'll talk about the pass rush now. And I think we're going to get done with this episode in record time, but there is a lot to talk about on this pass rush. So the big story here in this game, the Broncos threw the ball or got sacked on 38 plays. All right. The Ravens allowed ample time and space 22 times. That is 58% of the time. Now, if you, I'll give you a few points of comparison, but I normally say in the high 20s is kind of a standard. I'd like the Ravens to be no higher than that. You know, defensively, I'd like the Ravens to be higher than that offensively. That's, you know, obviously the way you want it to go, but in the high 20s would be pretty normal. What was good about the 22 plays that went for ATS is that the Broncos only got 143 yards on this play, 6.5 yards per play, which is about 2 yards below what they should do on those plays. 8.5 would be my standard. They got 6.5, 44 yards below standard. Now, here's the weirdest number maybe that I've ever seen in terms of the pass rush. All four of the Ravens' sacks came on an ample time and space opportunity. So that means Bo Nix was sitting back there patting the football for 3 full seconds. Each of those plays where he eventually got sacked. And it's not like there's no pressure by 3 seconds on any of those 4 sacks. Okay. So not, it's not like, you know, the sack we saw by Simpson where he's been run around all over the place before Simpson finally comes in to make the tackle, or what happened on a couple of the sacks by both sacks by Robinson, where he chased him down or even got him on what was being converted into a run play. These were a matter of, you know, he's basically all alone there, can't find anybody in the secondary. Now, here's the weird thing about this. That obviously is a terrible thing for the pass rush to give up 22 ample time space opportunities. It's a damn good thing for the secondary that they can turn those into 4 sacks and only 6.5 net yards per pass. I mean, that's not very good. You will not win games if you... Well, maybe you would win games if you got 100% of your 100% of your plays is ample time and space and got 6.5 yards each. But it's not a good number. It's well below the standard for ample time and space. So that was the really bad number. Ball was out quick only 6 times the entire game, 16%. Very low number. Usually you get pressure. Pressure kind of competes with ample time and space. And if the pressure number is winning, then the ball out quick number will go up because the offensive coordinator will call more quick passes to get rid of the ball. But anyway, the ample time space number was just fine. They were winning that ample time space versus pressure number. So the ball out quick number was, they were never incented to get the ball out quick properly. They did it a few times, but they were never really incented to do it, to set up plays that were, you know, screens and slants and whatnot. But anyway, they mixed it up a little bit. 24 yards on those 6 plays, which is also bad. That's about 2 yards below what you'd expect, and 12 yards below additionally for the game there they lost. And then it's actually happened to be the exact same as last week. 10 plays for 30 yards with pressure. It's only 26% of the time they got pressure. Way, way, way too low. And 3.0 yards per play on those plays. So 5 yards below the standard. Not good at all. In total, Nix underperformed his opportunity set by about 51 yards. He had 197 actual yards. That's net. And that was 200 against 248 expected yards. So we were watching the same football game. You saw Bo Nix overthrow receivers in the end zone who were open. He certainly missed some opportunities to throw scoring plays. Not that Jackson didn't miss one or two himself. That's about it. That's about all he missed, and a couple were dropped in this game. But he certainly has missed a few the last few weeks. But this was a game where, honestly, they got a lot of unforced errors from Bo Nix, and I think that affected Orr's decision to scheme with the combination of numbers and pressure, which is what I'm going to get into next. So before I do that, though, I want to just say, I want to give you a point of comparison on the 58% ATS. The 2023 Ravens, for the whole season, allowed 26% ATS. So less than half of the ATS percentage in this game. So that's the difference between Triple Crown defense and what the Ravens have now, which is pretty darn bad. The 58%, though, by far the worst of the year. The Ravens might have been over 50% against the Browns, or it might just been close. But in either case, this 58% is by far and away the highest. All right, let me take just a moment here. One of the difficult things about doing the show solo is you need to take a break to take a drink of water or just to take a moment to rest your voice for a second because no one else is doing the talking and you don't have the privilege of the mute button. But anyway, nice. Let's move on to the number of pass rushers used. So they used five pass rushers or more on just seven snaps. That's 18% of this total snaps by the Broncos. That's a very low number. They sprinkled in a little bit of deception, which I'll get to. I think the deception and the numbers were less than I would have expected given who they had playing on the defensive line. When you have Chris Wormley and Josh Tupou in there, you better have some other way to get pressure is a nice way to say it. When you have, frankly, have Matt Ibike and Washington in there, you better have an alternative way to get pressure too because those guys – Matt Ibike is not nearly the player he is when he doesn't have Travis Jones or Michael Pierce next to him to eat up that double team, nor is the rest of your pass rush as likely to get home from the edges. So this was a case where I was a little bit surprised, but if I had to point to a reason why it occurred, why there was less pressure and less use of numbers, it was because Orr felt like he didn't really need to. They're getting good enough results because Bo Nix was making a lot of unforced errors. And I think if people say, well, that won't work in the playoffs, this is one time when that bullshit line is probably actually true. Normally, I get really tired of people saying that, like any Joe on Twitter really knows what will work in the playoffs and what won't. At least give your entire set of reasoning. Don't just tell me that won't work in the playoffs is what I'd say on this. But anyway, this is one case where better quarterbacks would pick apart what the Ravens did in terms of pressure, would make better use of the ample time and space they had. So it's a little bit of a bummer that it's good that it worked out this way, but it's a bummer that they probably can't replicate this for future times or it won't obviously be replicated. I wouldn't try it with Joe Burrow, by the way. I definitely this Thursday I expect the Ravens to be trying for much more variance and embracing that in a bigger way. Let me give you the numbers actually for each pass rush group, just so we'll go through this quickly. When they rushed four, they never rushed three. They rushed four 31 times, 162 yards on this play, 5.2 yards per play with three sacks and the one turnover, the interception by Washington. They rushed five times, 41 yards, 8.2 yards per play. They rushed one six times, ending in a 6 yard sack. And they rushed seven one time, ending in incomplete. So the five times they rushed five plus, which is the typical definition of the blitz, was 5.2 yards per play, which was the exact same that the four man pass rush gave them, 5.2 yards per play. So I don't think Orr was wrong against Denver and Bo Nix. I'm just not sure it's replicatable that they'd be able to do this. The three sacks and 31 attempts is very good for the four man rush, by the way. Always nice to get that. The fact that they were all ample time and space means, again, that's also not likely replicatable. Let's talk a little bit about deception as well, because they had some limited deception this game. Seven off-ball blitzes out of 38. All of those were singles, 0.18 per play. They gave up 38 yards on those plays, 7.6 yards per play. They also had one sack. Now, remember, against the Browns, when they were blitzing, they had some success getting home. Or Darius Washington might have had a sack, or he came close, or got a pressure. And who else? Hamilton had a sack. So they did some positive things to get to the quarterback with odd man rushes coming from off ball. So those things are, I think the Ravens are going to have to reconsider them for the game against Cincinnati because I think it'll be important to generate that variance. All right, stunts. Now, stunts, we've had this discussion a number of times on the show, but stunts can be called on field or they can be called off field. When they're called off field, usually are run within a specific set of linemen, off and tackle end stunts. But they ran only two stunts the whole game, which tells me a couple of things. First of all, both the passes were incomplete. Second, they were obviously making an attempt to cage or funnel rush Knicks. So they were trying to maintain the pocket integrity as a big part of what they did. One thing about stunts, they confuse opposing linemen, but they break down pocket integrity. That's the trade-off you're getting. They also take a little bit longer to develop. That would have been okay in this game, by the way, that taking a little bit longer to develop, it still would have been effective. But it's pretty clear that Orr put the kibosh on any stunts called on field in this game. That he said, guys, we need to maintain pocket integrity. So no deciding on the field, no rock, paper, scissors to figure out, you know, how you're going to set up a stunt on a play. You gotta play it the way we call it from the sideline. So anyway, those two stunts both did end up in incomplete passes, but didn't end up being a meaningful component of what the Ravens tried to do in this game. They did use simulated pressure four times. Now, in theory, against a quarterback like Knicks, simulated pressure is a pretty good thing to do because it'll hopefully confuse the quarterback on where his hot reads are exactly, and you might be able to make a play off that. And you also might confuse the offensive line. Now, Denver has a good offensive line, so they're going to be less likely to fall for the bait in terms of simulated pressure events. They dropped four times. They dropped two or three from the line of scrimmage. Those plays did work pretty well, 4 yards, 1.3 yards per play. It's not that they didn't work. It's just I wouldn't expect them to normally be tremendously successful against this group. And against Knicks, you could end up with him finding some hot reads. Knicks a very accurate college quarterback, so I think he'd be able to read some of that more accurately. But they always say pro game moves a lot faster. You have probably less in the way of mistakes to fall back on. And I don't know how well the Broncos schemed up their attempts to get a hot read on a play-by-play basis. So you, in some ways, you've got to kind of be looking for it. And if you're Peyton Manning or Drew Brees or Tom Brady, you know, 10 years into your career, you know every hot read as soon as the guys line up for it. You know, Ben Roethlisberger, Patrick Mahomes, same thing. You know, they'll shred you if you try to do a lot of simulated pressures. Against a rookie, that's a time when, you know, simulated pressures can be effective. They may not really take advantage of hot reads. And I don't know how complex they're making the calls or how well Bo Nix has adapted to reading that at the NFL level. It randomly one play the entire game with two plus elements of deception. Okay, an incomplete pass, fewest of the season by far. They might have had a two or a three in another game, but normally that number is four, five, six in that range. And when I talk about that, it means maybe a simulated pressure and a stunt, maybe a stunt and a blitz, maybe two blitzes on the same play because that would count as ready, maybe two stunts on the same play. That play used to be called Double Twist Willie in X and O football, if you ever played that back in the 1980s. But they have multiple ways they can try and do it, and they just didn't do it in this game, largely because they really wanted to shut down the stunts and they really reduced the blitzes. They did some adapting at halftime because they had been successful at stopping, or Knicks had made some mistakes and they'd been good at stopping Denver without, you know, rushing numbers and doing crazy stuff. They had five of their seven blitzes were in the first half. So in the second half, they ran only two, and they had one of their two stunts in the first half. And looks like simulated pressure was two and two by half, so no big difference there. They did have a lot more ample time and space in the second half, big strings of ample time and space, including, this is pretty incredible, seven ample time and spaces in a row at one point during this game. So anyway, very different opponent they'll face in Cincinnati, and I think they'll look at that in some different ways in terms of how they want to embrace variance in that game. All right, really appreciate folks listening. I'll be coming back to the second part of the show again solo, and we'll talk about some individual player performances, and we'll get into some other goodies like the MVPs from this game and a very deep set of mailbag questions, which is good. I like to have mailbag questions, especially when I'm doing the show solo. That makes things a lot easier. Want to tell you folks, I really appreciate the listeners tremendously, particularly using hashtag film study mailbag. When you put a tweet out there and you're asking me a question, don't send me a DM
with that, because I can't sort that normally to find your mailbag question when the chips are on the line and I'm in the middle of the show and I need to find it. So people have been sending me questions on Reddit. I have a very difficult time with that in terms of getting them to them as mailbag questions. I have to kind of cut and paste them, but it's a more complex thing for me to take care of there. And you can have these for any of the shows. If you have a question about a matchup show, I'll get to the question with Frazier. If you have a question for Voss that you want us to talk about on Friday morning GM, love to have it. Hit us up there. And if you just have it on the normal offense and defense reviews, mostly we would assume that anything that doesn't obviously fall into the other categories, we'll take care of there. Thanks again for listening, and I'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. Some of y'all might have heard I made the cross-country move from LA to New York last year, and Wayfair has definitely helped me create the feeling of home wherever I am. I love a cozy couch and a comfy living room that feels like our little sanctuary for our family. And I love vases, I love candles, I love anything that kind of makes you feel at home and peaceful. Anyway, something about me is I love options when it comes to making my home more me. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. Everyone loves a good deal. I mean, who does not want free and fast and easy delivery? Come on. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel, because right now new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Access big savings every day. All in the Kroger app.
Get tender Heritage Farm boneless chicken breast for $2.49 a pound. Then find low prices on thousands of items like sparkling ice water, Kroger brand chips, and more, all with your card.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.